Welcome to the Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing Office Shootout, where we talk about the evolving world of the American soccer business. There's the whistle. Let's kick this thing off.
Greetings from Chicago. We're back after the holidays and ready to attack 2020. Today I'm joined by a few very special guests. Rather than just saying your name, let's start this episode off with a bang and have each of you share one soccer-related prediction for 2020.
Hi, my name's Dylan. My 2020 prediction is that both the men and the women will qualify for the 2020 Olympics.
Hey everyone, my name is Harry, and my prediction for 2020 is that it'll be the first year that teams will be taking TikTok seriously across MLS.
Hey guys, this is Ubaldo. I believe that the PL is going to switch over to a NFL-style challenge instead of the regular bar that they've implemented now.
Hey y'all, this is Chris. My 2020 prediction is that England will lift Euro 2020 trophy on home soil.
Boo.
Trash take.
And my name's Mike. My bold prediction is that the Philadelphia Union will make MLS Cup. So on this episode, we're going to take a look back at the 2010s. The decade might be in our rearview mirrors, but it's still near and dear to our hearts. So let's do this in two ways. I want you each to share your favorite business or marketing-related story, as well as your favorite on-field moment from the 2010s. Dylan, you want to get us started?
Thanks, Mike. I'd love to. So the first topic that we were talking about is what was a big happening over the course of the last decade that we think, you know, sort of changed soccer for the better. And in my opinion, I think it's really hard to overstate the growing popularity of streaming services and over-the-top services, and how accessible soccer, not only here in the U.S. is, but also sort of across the oceans. So obviously NBC Sports Gold, you can watch any PL game that you want, but I think the biggest contributor in the streaming world, at least right now, is ESPN Plus. They're going to have Bundesliga rights. Obviously, they already have. You can watch any Major League Soccer game that you want on there. They have the U.S. Open Cup now. So I think for fans that are already introduced to soccer.
Serie A as well.
As well as the Danish Superliga.
USL.
So I think for the fans who are, you know, already a bit indoctrinated to the sport of soccer, you're just going to be fully overcome with joy when you flip on ESPN Plus and see not only matches but original programming. So in my opinion, ESPN Plus and the growth of streaming services has been a huge benefit to soccer fans.
Yeah, I think, like, as a movement, internet television's kind of taken over for generations, kind of age 18 to 29. And as of 2017, in a Pew Research study, they found that 6 in 10 young adults, their main form of watching television was over the internet. So I just think that kind of shows that I think that cable mentality of literally needing a cable subscription is kind of going away, and along with ESPN Plus, YouTube TV, BR, everything, everyone is kind of taking advantage of that movement towards cable-less television.
So on the subject of broadcasts, Harry, why don't you share your choice?
For me, I think the biggest story in soccer in America really over the past decade goes to NBC, and it's not just the story itself that is a part of why this has become so important and everything, but it's rather everything that they've done to change the platform that soccer is working on within America. Because when they won the rights to the Premier League in the United States, it changed the game. I know streaming has from a technological revolution, but from a perspective of being taken seriously, because yes, over-the-top services will always be an opportunity to connect with more people, but those are going to be with the hardcore fans. What soccer has right now is it has the niche audience. What it doesn't have is the mainstream connection to fans all around the country who could just tune in while watching on their couch at 9 a.m. on Saturday because they've got nothing going on and they've just woken up. What NBC provides and what they've done and how they've taken this project seriously, especially compared to past broadcasters, it's absolutely changed the game. And they haven't just stopped there with having an incredible crew on TV that are just extremely talented with what they do. They've taken another step further and brought in the likes of FanFest and other opportunities for fans to connect in person and bring that experience that you're so used to in a vacuum into a community. And that's really what makes soccer special and sports special. And by doing that, it's a great step. And I'm really excited for what they're going to be doing in the 2020s, because what they did to lay the foundation was incredible in the 2010s. And it's just a spot that is just primed for even more success in this decade and future decades ahead.
Yeah, that's great. I think NBC's impact and their coverage of the Premier League, I think, as Harry so eloquently put, I think it's sort of hard to discredit anything that NBC has done. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job. I mean, you remember this towards the start of the decade that they had MLS as well, and I think a lot of people were happy about how they approached MLS, and I think they've taken what they've done with the Premier League they've taken what they did with MLS and just taken it up to a whole new level with the Premier League coverage.
And by no means do I want to throw a slight to anyone else who's been a broadcaster in the past, because as a kid, I have chills of nostalgia that run through me from watching Fox Soccer Report or Fox Soccer Channel. But the difference of the mainstream that NBCSN provides or matches on NBC on a regular basis is just unparalleled to what soccer fans have been treated to in the past. And it's just super exciting to see this continue to grow into the future.
All right, Ubaldo, what do you have for us?
All right, so I guess the big thing for me in the last 10 years was the growth of esports. There's no specific date in mind that I had for that, but over the last 10 years, there's just been a development in the infrastructure that allows for esports to be broadcast to people really everywhere. Streaming platforms and that access to those streaming platforms has really just allowed for bigger corporations to kind of tap into this revenue and provides different marketing opportunities. I think we've seen it most recently with places like Man City that are kind of having a collab with FaZe, I think I saw. And then most recently, while I turned on my Xbox, I saw 100 Thieves put their jersey on FIFA Ultimate Team. And that's just a startup that found a great brand and attached itself to it and is riding with it. And I think, you know, from EMLS to Foot Champions, there's just an opportunity for growth on every real like scale for corporations.
Yeah, just on the subject of esports, EMLS obviously launched 2 years ago and has done pretty well for themselves. This isn't a 2010s thing, but you look at how EMLS has changed. I mean, just yesterday, the Philadelphia Union signed Jay Ajayi, former Philadelphia Eagles running back and Super Bowl winner, as their EMLS player after Duel still left for Nashville. So the crossover is interesting. The esports story, yes, it came on the scenes in the 2010s, but for EMLS and esports, I think the story is pretty largely still to be written and something we'll see in the 2020s.
And even the MLS isn't the only league jumping in there, too. I've seen all the other, whether it's soccer or other sports. I mean, you've got the EPL over in England, and you've got other everything that the NBA is doing, too. But to the Union, it's funny that we mentioned them with Jay Ajayi, because what's crazy is there was a leak the other day of the Union's kit for next season on there. And I know that's cheating because it's 2020, but to show that progression you were talking about, Mike and Ubaldo, that the kit was leaked on there and everyone's like, is this the next kit for the club? And then 2 days later, that ended up being a report coming out from Jonathan Tannenwald, I believe, saying that the kits will be featured in the new release. So it's pretty funny to see how far it's come from as a kid being asked to get off FIFA for dinner, and that was the full extent of what video games were, to now it is having kits for top flight teams being leaked through the game now, which is really crazy to see the progression.
I think what's also interesting to note on the esports topic, I mean, I guess it's kind of outside the realm of esports, but it's, I think, an area to watch as it comes to gaming and sports gaming, is the growth of Twitch and other streaming services.
Mixer.
You see guys like Ninja, who wasn't a FIFA kind of guy, but is now a multimillionaire, has a branding deal with Adidas. So we're starting to see some of these esport athletes, gamers, streamers, sort of cross. You're seeing that line between games and other platforms really start to bleed into each other. I mean, just go on Twitch and watch some FIFA Ultimate Team stuff, and you'll see guys like Castro, who's, for every stream, is getting tens of thousands of people just watching him open decks, open cards, and play games and stuff. So to see the notoriety that some of these people are getting just for streaming the games that they play is pretty impressive.
Even it's funny because Ocho Cinco, what is known as a future Hall of Famer, if he's not already for the NFL, has completely rebranded himself post-playing career as a FIFA gamer, where he just tweets and challenges people like, hey, I'm in Hollywood, who wants to come play me? I got a hotel, like, or there's a cafe here I've got set up, or I'm in Oakland, or I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, whatever it is, Miami, where he's based. It's crazy to see how much it's grown, that a pro athlete who now is like, what do I do after, is a professional gamer, essentially.
All right, let's transition to Chris.
It kind of builds on what a lot of people already said already, but my biggest business-related story over the last decade has been the maturation of social media, and how teams and fans and players are using all the different platforms out there. You have your mainstays in Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Snapchat, but then you also have more emerging platforms now, like Harrison earlier mentioned TikTok. You have even clubs dabbling on Reddit, and you have like Instagram launching Instagram Stories, which is a copy of Snapchat, but you have others, like people like evolving like offerings within those platforms, and these teams have turned social media into a massive marketing tool, amassing millions and millions of followers, and it's also been a great way for fans to connect closer with that team. So previously, especially within soccer, it's a lot of, in England, it's like all the, it's like where your zip code where you were born is like the team you support. But now social media, coupled with the increase of media rights, like it's as easy as someone in London to follow Chelsea as it is for someone in Idaho or someone in South Africa, someone in Indonesia. So there's just it's brought the world together, and it's also given people an opportunity to get closer to their clubs, to interact with their favorite players as well, and the players to in turn engage back with them, and again the clubs have also monetized these channels through the platform, so it's become revenue opportunities for them as well. So
I think the one way to easily wrap this up and bring all these things together is to highlight the common thread between each of them. Dylan mentioned this word earlier, and that word is access. So Dylan talked about streaming, whether that's ESPN Plus or NBC Gold or whichever platform, and the amount of access people have, whether they're at home or on the subway, at a bar, wherever. I mean, they can get the sport however they want it. You know, Ubaldo mentioned esports and the MLS. It's great because it helps introduce fans to the sport. I mean, they may not care about MLS, but they play FIFA because it's a game that a lot of people play. I mean, from broadcasting to esports to what Chris just talked about with social media, I mean, I think the 2010s was all about an explosion of access to the sport.
And I think the cool thing about access is just how quickly it's evolved. You know, I was born in 93, and I clearly remember or have heard stories from my dad who would go to like an Irish pub in downtown Orlando and would have to pay money to go into a back room to watch the U.S. men's national team play away to Trinidad, where now it's on TV. Like, it's just super easy. And it's the same thing with the Premier League. Like, back in the 90s, some people had like the black box where you pay like $5 and then you could see an English broadcast of the game. So I think to go from a time when we were all alive, even though we were very young, to now, in some cases, not even 20 years later, to see that growth from having to pay to watch one game in a room at some local bar to watching one game a week on Fox Soccer Channel to now having literally 20, 30 leagues available to you for a monthly price is pretty incredible.
So speaking of Trinidad, I guess I'll wrap up this first question by I wrote down a few other stories that aren't tech related but dominated the 2010s. So we'll start with Trinidad. So missing the 2018 World Cup had a huge impact on business. I mean, Fox paid $400 million for the rights to broadcast the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. I think when they bought those rights, they probably counted on the U.S. being in both competitions. We'll see what happens in 2022, but they obviously weren't at the 2018 tournament. If you look back at where MLS was in 2010, there were only 16 teams. There's now double that or just over double that. So just the restructuring of the pyramid as well as with NASL and USL and USL changing to their different tiers, you know, the whole restructuring of the pyramid has been a story to watch. The FIFA scandal obviously had a major implications, and the U.S. had a big hand in that. You also can't look back at the 2010s and not talk about the success of the women's national team. And they won, what, 2 World Cups, how many gold medals? You can't mention the women's national team in the modern era either without mentioning their fight for equal pay and women's rights. We've seen brands increase their focus on the women's game. We've written a lot about what Budweiser has done, for example. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things, obviously, to remember about the 2010s, but I think those are some of the bigger ones worth mentioning.
Yeah, I think I would agree with what Mike said. I want to go back to one of your points about the restructuring of the pyramid in the U.S., this goes back in line with what Chris was mentioning about how it's sort of, if you're born in England or Germany or any European country, you kind of are tethered to your local team based on where you're born. And that goes on for generations. I think with the restructuring of the pyramid now in the US, over the course of the last decade, you're starting to see teams from USL League 2 all the way up to MLS. Who are really spanning coast to coast. You have teams in Des Moines, you have teams in Madison, Wisconsin.
Who are doing great things and really like breaking through.
Right.
Saw one of the things that they did the other day on Reddit, where they're giving and combining a little bit into esports. They are issued a football manager, the game challenge to fans. And if they are able to complete and rise them up to the top of the American pyramid system within the game, within a mod of the game, they then get a personalized letter from the coach and all this other recognition.
That's cool. But yeah, I just think it's important to note that 10 years ago, there wasn't this sort of plethora of teams from top to bottom in U.S. soccer. So it's just, again, go back to the main point, access.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. I mean, does a team like Madison do as well as they're doing right now without social media being an easy way to provide fans access? I mean, I think everyone here would agree that they wouldn't be. Are they doing as well if fans didn't have access to ESPN Plus to see different games or play FIFA to understand the nuances of the sport? I mean, it all comes back to access at the end of the day. All right, let's transition back to the soccer field. Let's go in reverse order. Chris, what was your favorite on-field moment from the 2010s?
You had actually mentioned it earlier, but I would say the Women's World Cup 2015 final. It was a momentous occasion for a variety of reasons. First of all, it was their first World Cup title since 1999. It was a revenge for their 2011 loss against Japan in penalties. It was more or less a home game since it was being played with our friends to the north in Canada. Can keep going, but it's like they jumped out to a 4-0 lead within the first 16 minutes. Carly Lloyd had that amazing goal from midfield. And then just to top it off, it was at 25.4 million viewers. It was and still is the most watched soccer match in U.S. history. I remember I was watching the game in Lincoln Park in Chicago with thousands upon thousands of American fans, U.S. soccer fans, U.S. women's soccer fans, people who had never watched U.S. women's soccer before, and it was just an amazing experience to see people embracing the women's team, embracing women's soccer, and just really just having a great time as well.
Yeah, I think that another really cool thing about that, to your point, is people were embracing women's soccer, the women's team, but we're also embracing each other, which I just think is cool. Like, it just shows the value and the importance of the sport in general, especially to Americans who are, I think the American spirit is about winning in a sense. So like, they got super behind something, and I mean, it made millions of fans, people who had probably never tuned into a game before.
Ubaldo?
My favorite on-field moment was the Liverpool versus Barcelona 4-0 after getting destroyed at the, Camp Nou.
Yeah.
Getting destroyed 3-0, where it made me literally turn off the TV and go to bed. Came back from class and noticed that this comeback was actually happening after a really disappointing last season where they lost the Premier League literally by a couple points, I think, or one.
They slipped up, right?
Yeah, literally slipped up. And then the way that they lost that final, where Salah just got his shoulder torn apart by Sergio Ramos, it felt like it just wasn't right. And seeing that 4-0 at Anfield was honestly one of the most exciting games that I've ever watched.
Can we go back to how after Liverpool-Barca, the first leg, when Barca throttled Liverpool, and the game ended, and your response was to go to sleep. I just want to be clear that this match was happening at like 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yeah. I worked at a gym at college, so I had to get up for the opening shift at like 4 in the morning. So I was just already tired from class and work. So that frustration just led me to go to sleep.
I'm not listening to any excuses. I'm just hearing, oh, okay, it's 4 in the afternoon. Clearly it's time to go to sleep.
Harry, you want to go?
My favorite moment of the 2010s is not actually my favorite moment. It is just the most defining moment in my fandom, I think, because growing up in Jersey, there were countless Red Bulls games that I went to, had got my heart invested in them, learned about the team, read about the history, saw the transition from the Metros to the Red Bulls, got a brand new stadium, a state-of-the-art that was best in the league. So there was like some glimpses of moments of, oh, I believe in this team, I'm ready for success to propel us to the future. But the more you learn, that they are truly, truly cursed. And you hear about the curse of Caracolla, and how it just goes back to literally day one, the beginning of everything. And so watching the 2012 playoffs with the Red Bulls versus, of course, the rival, DC United, and in classic That's So Metro fashion, multiple players encroached on a penalty kick that then had to be retaken. And mind you, Kenny Cooper was taking that penalty kick, who has never missed a penalty in his entire career up to that moment. So they had to retake it. It was then appropriately saved. And then at the death, and I think something like the 88th minute, Nick De Leon, in his rookie season, if I remember right, goes and scores a worldie, an absolute screamer, to just cement and put an official stamp. I mean, I felt my heart was branded on that day that just said, That's So Metro. And at that moment, I realized that team is truly, truly indeed cursed. And I will love them to the end of the earth. But at no point will I ever truly believe that an MLS Cup will be coming their way.
All right, Dylan.
All right. My favorite on the field moment, I think, is one that's pretty near and dear to any American soccer fan's heart, especially people who follow the men's national team program. I think what was so monumental about this moment was that it was in a World Cup. Chris's point, there are a lot of people who tune in for the World Cup to watch the U.S. who have never watched soccer before. And I think to see a moment like Landon Donovan's goal against Algeria to win the group over England.
Shout out Rob Green.
Yeah, shout out Rob Green. To win the group over England, Slovenia, and to just really light a fire under a lot of fans, it was a pretty amazing moment. And I think it was perfectly encapsulated in that video that came out what seemed like 10 minutes afterward, but it cut a bunch of clips from live views of fans watching it around the world, American fans watching it around the world. And it goes back to what I said. It's just like people embracing each other, seeing beers flying in the air, people standing on tables screaming. It's just such a, it's a moment that really gets into the core of what makes sports awesome and so passionate. And I will always thank Landon for that moment. It was pretty amazing. And I'll never forget my reaction. My impulse was to run. So I just sprint out my front door and ran down my street, down Willow Tree in Longwood, Florida, screaming.
Shout out.
And people were running out of their house because they thought I was being chased. But it seriously, that is just like, I can't think of a moment more powerful than that from a U.S. men's national team perspective.
I'm biased. I think a lot of us are as well. But if you were to ask me the defining singular moment of the decade, I mean, that would top my list by miles. So I think that would be my answer as well, but I'm not gonna steal your answer. So staying on the Landon theme here, since Dylan took Algeria, I will say that from a personal standpoint, in 2014, so Landon is my favorite men's national team player of all time. It always will be. In 2014, when he got his, when he was not called up for the World Cup, and he received his last cap in Hartford, Connecticut, decided on a whim to drive from Chicago to Hartford overnight. So drove out there, and then the following weekend I flew out to LA for his last regular season home game. Got to see Boys to Men sing the national anthem, which was icing on the cake. And then later that season, because of work obligations, ended up at MLS Cup to see him lift one last trophy. So I think that's a series of events, but the collective one-offs or last moments for Landon would be at the top of my list. All right, let's end it there. Big thank you to everyone who joined us today. Happy 2020 and happy soccer.